Good afternoon. We'll call the Senate Higher Ed Committee to order. Today is Monday, March 12th, 2012. First, we're going to switch the agenda around, and we're going to move Senator Fischbach up. Senate File 2289. Senator Fischbach, welcome to your committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you pushing me up in the agenda here.
Anything for you, Senator Fischbach.
But as soon as we, and we will as soon as Senator Vanderveer.
And there he is.
You're 1 minute too late. But my understanding is that Senate File 2289 would be laid over for possible inclusion. So I will just turn it over to Tricia Grimes from OHE to explain.
Thank you.
For the record, Tricia Grimes from the Office of Higher Education. This is an
welcome, Ms. Grimes.
Thank you. This is an agency bill. It's a little technical change by changing the word individual to person. Elsewhere in statute, the word person is defined so that, for example, a college savings plan account owner who wanted to have it in his will that a trust would be the contingent owner would be able to do so. That's really all it does.
Okay. Senator Fischbach, anything else?
Mr. Chair, no. If there's any questions from the committee, we could certainly try to answer them.
Anyone in the audience wishing to testify on Senate File 2289? Seeing none, we'll lay the bill over for possible inclusion.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Senator Vanderveer, welcome to the committee. Whenever you're ready on Senate File 2036.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do believe we have the A1 amendment to the technical amendment relating to the dates that it's effective.
Well, and Senator Vanderveer, I believe this is your first hearing, so that could be offered as an author's amendment. Not a problem. So, Senator Brown, would you be willing to offer that for Senator Vanderveer?
Yes. Madam Chair, I move the A1 amendment.
Any questions on the A1? I believe that everybody has a copy of it in their packet. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion does prevail. Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What Senate File 2036 does is it extends the benefit of tuition assistance to graduate or to family members of fallen officers who attend graduate school. Currently, you can only get assistance for undergraduate. And so this just extends that provision. Here to discuss it is Ms. Silvera Lindemer. If she'd like to come up and drop the bill to me.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, Committee on Higher Education. For the record, my name is Jennifer Silvera Lindemer. My husband, Officer Sean Silvera, gave his life in the line of duty on September 6, 2005. And I cannot tell you specifically many details about the year following his death. Truthfully, my life became a blur, one where I often wished my life would have ended with his. But my saving grace came in the form of two little people, my son Jordan, who was 20 months old at the time, and my daughter Madeline, who was 5 months old at the time. And for their sake, I vowed that no matter how broken life felt, I would find a way to find good again. Writing became my therapy, and in 2009, a memoir about our story of love and loss was published in a book called Believe. people have asked if my book was the reason that Sean died, and I strongly reply that my husband didn't die so that I could write a book. I wrote a book so that I could survive his dying. When Sean died, I received a beautiful certificate from the state of Minnesota informing me that I was eligible for an education benefit under the Public Safety Officers Benefit Fund in accordance with Minnesota Statute 299A.45. I tucked it away, unsure if I would ever use it. In the fall of 2011, I started grad school at Bethel University to pursue my master's degree in communication. My desire is to help other widows find hope. Education is a foundation to making a difference, whether I pursue a career in counseling, leading grief groups, or writing more books, my passion to write about healing, specifically in the area of children. I believe the best thing we can do with the pain in our life is to help someone else with the pain in their life. This fall, I pulled out my educational certificate to research the details, and I talked with one of the assistants in the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. She informed me that the educational benefit is limited to those seeking undergraduate degrees. Out of curiosity, I asked how many widows have used the higher education benefit, and her response was not many. I inquired why the number is low, and she said, many who are in your situation, married with children at the time of the line of duty death occurs, they already have their four-year degree. It's just hard to predict who will use it. It made me wonder as a state how we can better utilize the benefit to better our communities with skilled individuals willing to help people regain life and find hope to be active contributors to our society. How can we ensure that the official education certificate with its beautiful, shiny gold emblem that promises hope is put into action, not only to help ourselves, but ultimately to help somebody else? Only 1% of our nation's population under the age of 50 is widowed. Only 7% of our nation's population pursues master's degrees. The statistic is only a fraction when considering those widowed in the state of Minnesota. Still, a fraction of people can make a world of difference. Weekly, I receive emails from widows across the nation who have read my book on grief and loss, and they write to share their stories of hurt and desperation. The one common thread that I find is that they all hope to find hope. One woman wrote to me and said, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts in your book. It has helped me so much to know that I am not alone and connect with someone who understands. It gave me the revelation that this is the beginning of a new life for me, and I am the ember left in the wreckage of a burned down house. I can die out, fade, or I can ignite again. Last year, I happily remarried, and now my saving graces, Jordan, Madeline, along with my husband Stephen and my two bonus daughters, are part of a blended family of six. I am writing my master's thesis on blended families. I want to give back something to those who are hurting. And I believe that that is the goal of the Public Safety Officer Survivor Grant, to help ignite those lives lost in grief, lost in hurt, and wanting to find lives of hope. I want to help them to find the good again. I am respectfully asking your committee to please consider changing the Minnesota State Statute 299A.45 to include graduate-level degrees.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the committee? Thank you very, very much for coming and telling your story. We have a couple of other folks on the agenda. Mike Servetka.
Good afternoon, Mike Servetka, Ramsey County Sheriff's Department, and the current board member for the Law Enforcement Memorial Association and past president. My statements are brief. Our organization was started back in 1975 by our founding member Jim Crawford, and he was one of the biggest proponents of this current bill as it stands, pushing it through the legislature. Our organization exists in a twofold mission. One is to honor those officers who have given that ultimate sacrifice to the best of our ability, and two, to help surviving families, spouses, children, and officers from the respective departments. And this bill, it just extends that one more step to help those family members with another step towards education to support their families. Most families are two income, and you lose that one income. This would help those people that with the higher education, better job, better paying jobs. Jennifer said it better than I can ever say it. I'm glad she brought this up. I think this is a good amendment to the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to clarify my understanding of this, because it does have that you have to be under age 23, but it's for a dependent child. But for a spouse, there's no age limit. So someone who has a baccalaureate, who maybe has a year, and maybe they got it when they were 21, they could then maybe use this for a couple of years or a year or two, as long as they're not 23 yet. But the spouse could be any age, and that would be a limited number of people. Dependent children could add quite a large number to this. And I don't know if the fund is adequate then. So I just want to make sure we're mainly changing just the surviving spouse would be affected.
Senator Vanderveer, and then I believe Ms. Grimes from OHE wants to explain a little bit too. So, Senator Vanderveer.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling is correct. That's why we didn't change current law. We did not want to expand it other than for the spouse. And explain it better.
Ms. Grimes.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, the change that is being complicated is just for spouses, to let spouses use it for graduate school. If they hadn't already used up 5 years' worth as undergraduates. The program has had over the years anywhere from 6 to 16 recipients, counting both dependent children and spouses. On average, it's been 12. And the appropriation is $100,000 a year. On average, in recent year, we've spent $64,000 a year. So in the fiscal note, we said that we thought we could absorb this change without needing an additional appropriation.
Senator Roebling.
That does answer my question.
Oh, okay.
I was just worried about how many more eligible I wanted to make sure it didn't include the eligible or the dependents, that we weren't expanding it to them because it would have been a lot more people. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, you know, when my kids had their baccalaureates, I told them, you're on your own now. And I think most of us as parents, you know, say to their children, you've got your baccalaureate. You have to continue on your own dime after this. And so I thought that it would probably be applicable here, too.
Thank you very much. And then Ms. Grimes, do you have anything to add that you would want to add while you're there so we don't have to call you back up?
Madam Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have, but that's all I plan to say.
Okay, thank you very much. I do have another. I have Chris Cousins from City of St. Clair. Please join us, sir, and identify yourself for the record.
I'm Chris Cousins. I'm a council member from the City of St. Clair, and I'm also on the board of directors for LEMA. I can't say it much better than Jennifer or Mike did already, but it's when a family member dies. My grandfather was killed in March or May 6th of 1979. You can't prepare for that. So people that might have had plans in the future, plans to finish up degrees, that's all taken away from them, and they have to concentrate back on their family. So any added benefits to help out the families of survivors, myself and the LEMA is 100% for.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions or discussion from the committee? Senator Vanderveer, do you have anything, or any of your witnesses have anything to add? Oh, you've got a question.
Just a question, I think, for Mr. Fuller on the effective date.
On the effective date.
Madam Chair, it's effective for students who enroll in programs after July 1. So it's forward-looking. It doesn't go back to 1990. That's why we made the amendment to make it clear that they have to enroll. It's for courses you enroll in after July 1st, and that's picked because people enroll apparently for at that point in time for some classes in the summer. So it's as soon as possible, basically.
For classes enrolled after July 1st, 2012?
Actually, after June 30th.
June 30th?
2012. It's not retroactive.
I believe Senator Koch was willing to move the bill for Senator Vanderveer. But I believe we are going to lay it over, so Senator Koch moves, we lay it over for possible inclusion. Unless you have something else you wanted to add.
I think not at this time, Madam Chair.
Senator Koch moves that we lay the Senate file 2036 as amended over for possible inclusion. All in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Thank you all for being here, and we will be putting together a omnibus bill soon. And
thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
More, I think.
Oh, one more.
Senator Fischbach, welcome back to your
thank
committee.
You so much. Well, it seemed to be a better use of our time to get the small bill done and get that taken care of while we had a few minutes. But I do have Senate File 1573, and basically I think we are going to lay this one over, too, so I would move that we lay it over for possible inclusion. But Senate File 1573 essentially just raises the limit for the revenue bonds that Minsky is able to let. And I do have Ms. King with me who can explain it in greater detail because it's one.
Sure. Ms. King, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator Miller and members. It's a pleasure to be here. I am grateful to Senator Fischbach for her support of this proposal. The Board of Trustees is seeking...
Ms. King, please state your name for the record before you start with the testimony. Thank you.
Pardon me. I should know better. My name is Laura King, and I'm the Vice Chancellor for Finance for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities.
Thank you, Ms. King.
The Board of Trustees of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities is seeking legislative support for an increase in the statutory limit on our capacity for issuing revenue bonds. This bond authority allows us to continue our progress on multi-year master facilities plans for our colleges and universities. The revenue fund is a creature of state statute created in 1955 to provide revenue bond financing capacity for auxiliary facilities at our state universities. Over the years, revenue bonds were issued to build and repair dormitories, parking ramps, student unions, and cafeteria facilities at the universities. Shortly after the 1995 merger, we paid off the remaining debt and began integrating auxiliary facilities master plans into our larger academic facilities master planning process. In 2008, the two-year colleges came to us with a request that we seek legislative authority to expand statutory access to the revenue fund to the colleges as well. And we did that, and the legislature supported it, and we now have access in the revenue fund to both college and university-hosted auxiliary revenue-producing facilities. The fund presently has $265 million in outstanding debt with a weighted average remaining maturity of 17 years. The annual debt service cost for the current debt represents about 20% of the annual revenue in the related auxiliary facilities. The bonds are retired through special purpose charges related to the facilities. For instance, bonds issued to construct or renovate residence halls are retired with room charges for the students living in the residence halls. If we issue bonds to pay for student unions, then the bonds are retired through a student union fee paid for by the students using the facilities, and likewise parking ramps and et cetera. We've been working with the colleges and universities to develop 3 to 5 year master plans. These plans brought us to you today with a request to increase the capacity so that we can continue our multi-year planning. No project would proceed without the student consultation process that's in board policy and is a very high standard of expectation by our board, and no project would proceed without the board completing its due diligence on the financial capacity of the campus, the financial impact on the students, and the relationship of the project to the facility's master plan. The current planning outlook includes $152 million for university projects and $25 million for college projects. All of the above projects would proceed through the board's policy review. They'd require strong letters of support from the related local student associations, and, of course, we'd complete all the financial due diligence that's required before we would issue bonds. The Minsky Revenue Bond Fund at this stage has a credit rating that's one off the state's credit rating, and it's at par or slightly better than the University of Minnesota credit rating. It's a very well-administered fund, and it has a very good underwriting standard. Today we're asking for your support for this bill, and we would be more than happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the committee? Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. King, if I heard you right, the principal and interest payments amounted to about 20%?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, as of today, current debt outstanding of about $265 million, and when we unpack all that and turn it into an annual cost to the fund, it's about 20%, which for a revenue-type facility operations is below average.
Follow-up, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. King, what is sort of that average that we're below?
Ms. King?
Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson, if you look at the credit analysis for these kinds of funds across the country, the Minsky Fund rates better than average, because its debt burden is lower, its rate structure is lower, and the assurance of the revenue stream is higher than if you looked at the University of Florida or the University of Texas. On this question particularly, I can't answer whether the average is 30% or 35%. I apologize. I'll try to find an answer for you, but I don't know offhand.
Any other questions from the committee? If not, thank you, Ms. King. And it looks like we have two more testifiers, Ms. Medeiros and Ms. Bardorner, if you want to come up to the table and
Hello there. Hello. How are you doing? Good.
Whoever would like to start, go ahead and please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Amanda Bardonner, State Chair of the Minnesota State University Student Association. Today I'm here in support of the proposed increase to the Revenue Fund Bonding Authority for Minsky. After long consideration, our Board of Directors, which is made up of the 7 state university student body presidents, decided that this increase not only benefited the system as a whole, but also the students at their individual campuses. It definitely was a long conversation with lots of in-depth conversation, I guess, to the extent of the increase and also what this would mean for the future. Ultimately, our board is supportive because it does take us out to the 15 bonding cycle, and also that allows for more planning to happen on our campuses. Our students are all extremely supportive of the process that they have on their each individual campuses for the consultation. They not only are involved in the 15-year planning cycles for the universities, but they also are very active, obviously, in the revenue fund projects, whether it be in the res halls or any particular student unions. I also wanted to let the committee know that there are opportunities for students on campuses to voice concerns that they have with the process. We've seen this happen several times. The case most recent, was actually at St. Cloud State. Their students voted down a revenue fund project twice because they weren't comfortable with the increase in fees, and now that project is not going forward at the level that it would have. It's at just the $5 million restoration that's needed for improvements to keep the building functioning. And so I just wanted to let you know that there are those opportunities for students. Our association feels very comfortable that our students' voices are heard in this process and that the fees are not just raised without thought. And so I guess at this point I would just stand for any questions.
Any questions from the committee? If not, thank you very much for your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank
Please
you.
State
Good
your
afternoon.
Name for the record.
Sure. Chair Miller, members, thank you for the opportunity to briefly address the committee this afternoon. For the record, my name is Jessica Medeiros, and I'm the Associate Director for the Minnesota State College Student Association, representing Minnesota's public two-year community and technical college students. I'm speaking to you today in support of an increase in the Minscu System's revenue fund authority at a level sufficient to fund four-year university projects through 2015. As for our two-year colleges, our association does not support additional authority at this time. New revenue fund projects levy significant fees upon students, so it is essential that we are as informed as possible about a project's development, scope, fee structure, and alternatives. Our students would like to work with Minscu System leadership prior to 2015 to strengthen the development process and scope of future revenue fund projects at our two-year colleges. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Medeiros. Any questions from the committee?
This is just for you.
If not, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thanks.
Senator Fischbach, that's all we have on the list. Is there anyone else in the audience that would wish to testify on Senate File 1573? Not Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I would just like to have it laid over for possible inclusion in the, I guess, the omnibus policy bill is what we may be calling it, but for a larger bill, in a larger bill.
Okay. Senator Fischbach moves that Senate File 1573 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Senate Higher Education Policy Bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. So that's a pretty fast committee.
You know, Mr. Chair, I didn't even look at what time. It's because the bill presenters were very efficient today.
And a very good,
yes.
And a very good chair.
And a very good chair. So I Senator Miller or Chair Miller, I think we can adjourn then, and we are meeting again Wednesday.
All right. With no other business, the Senate Higher Ed Committee is adjourned, and we will meet Wednesday at 3 p.m.
Thank you.